Traders get set to bank on Bernanke.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning to you and welcome to the Morning Open. I'm Bob Moon in for Bill Radke. Without a lot of major economic data to watch this week, investors have been focusing on the outlook from the country's leading financial prognosticator. And Ben Bernanke takes the spotlight again today before lawmakers on Capitol Hill, before they asked the Federal Reserve boss to elaborate on his somewhat less than enthusiastic forecast earlier this week. Where's Wall Street? Right now, the Dow is up 24 points, about a quarter of a percent. The NASDAQ is up about half a percent. The S&P 500 up a third of 1%. Oil prices are up around 1% this morning on news Chinese demand could go higher with improving exports last month. Let's talk now to our Wednesday morning source for all things financial, analyst Richard DeCaeser of Woodley Park Research. And Richard, what about Mr. Bernanke's appearance today? Are investors going to want or need to hear more than he told us earlier this week, that the recovery is on track but just won't be terrific?
No, I don't think so. I think all he needs to do is to reaffirm the outlook. The recovery is on track. It may not be spectacular, but we're not slipping into a double-dip recession. And the reason I think that's important is because events in Europe have really raised the perception of those risks. Most economists don't see a double dip, but I think to have the Fed chief weigh in on this himself can only help buttress confidence. And no one's expecting terrific, so just to stay on track will be sufficient.
Now, the Fed's also been responding pretty aggressively to the European debt crisis. Are the troubles there likely to continue to affect Fed policy?
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, the Fed's been doing a couple things. Number one, it's been lending money to central banks abroad for about the past 5 or 6 weeks. But secondly, to whatever extent Europe's woes affect us, whether through our sales to Europe or through impacts on financial markets, that only encourages the Federal Reserve to be more lenient or more accommodative with monetary policy. So that means interest rates being lower for longer than would otherwise be the case.
Finally, Richard, I want to get your take on one particular primary election that was watched by bankers last night. Arkansas Democratic Senator Blanche Lincoln was reelected. She has pushed for a strong financial crackdown. Was Wall Street a big loser last night, do you think?
It didn't help their cause, for sure. Blanche Lincoln was the principal architect of a derivatives proposal that would basically say that the Fed can't provide help and the FDIC cannot provide insurance to those traders. It doesn't seem like it's going to make it into the final bill. She's on the conference committee. She can advocate for it, but there are a lot of people arguing the other side. So I think incrementally this improved the odds, but it's still not a slam dunk.
Richard DeCaeser is president of Woodley Park Research. Thanks for your insights.
My pleasure.
For more on Senator Blanche Lincoln's win in the primary, we turn to Jeff Horwich. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Bob.
First, let's explain why the big banks might care so much about a Senate primary in Arkansas.
Because Senator Lincoln wants to take away their derivatives trading. Derivatives are complex securities that get some of the blame for the financial crisis. Banking analyst Chris Marinac with FIG Partners says big banks like Citigroup and J.P. Morgan make billions of dollars from them.
But the derivatives business and other trading-related businesses were very profitable, creating a lot of cash flow and really being the engines of earnings that these companies are living off of for the moment.
Now, Senator Lincoln got a provision into the Senate financial reform bill that would force banks to spin off their derivatives trading operations.
But was this derivatives thing a big part of Blanche Lincoln's Senate campaign?
Absolutely. I mean, she went out of her way to own this issue. It was a prime example to say, hey, you know, I'm for Arkansas, not Wall Street. I'm taking on the big financial interests in politics.
Well, the financial reform bill is still being negotiated in Washington. Does this mean the banks have lost this battle over derivatives?
The derivatives ban is not in the House version of the financial reform bill. And Congressman Barney Frank, the powerful Democrat who led that bill through the House, he's reportedly not a fan. But Senator Lincoln is on the committee with Frank that's negotiating the final bill. On the one hand, you'd think she can relax and compromise a bit after last night, but now she's looking at her Republican opponent, so it's not a great time to flip-flop on one of your signature issues.
Marketplace's Jeff Horwich, thank you.
You're welcome, Bob.
White House budget planners want to tighten their purse strings. Departments and agencies have been ordered to identify their lowest performing programs to help trim 5% of federal spending. Here's Marketplace's John Dimsdale.
Instead of imposing budget cuts from the top down, White House officials want agencies to come up with their own ideas for trimming the fat. Maya McGinnis of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget says it's a good idea to turn to the folks on the front lines.
They know the programs the best. They have the hands-on experience with them, and I think they'll come up with an awful lot of good ideas of programs that are outdated, inefficient, and really don't need to be there anymore.
The president's budget director hopes to see a lot of wasteful duplication on the chopping block. For example, the 40 programs to promote job training. But Howard Rosen with the Trade Adjustment Assistance Coalition, which advocates for worker retraining, says you're not going to balance the budget by going after small programs.
The reason they're small is because they don't have a very loud constituency, and so it's very easy to cut these programs.
The inspiration for making agencies cut the budget came from the Defense Department, which has turned to the military bureaucracy to identify savings. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Morning Report for Wednesday, June 9th at marketplace.org. A Senate committee holds a hearing today on whether to raise liability caps for companies that cause oil spills. Right now, they're only responsible for $75 million in damages. One argument against lifting the cap is that smaller companies would be priced out of drilling. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
Legislation has been introduced in Congress that would blow the lid off the liability cap. It would be raised to $10 billion. Some lawmakers say that would boost insurance costs too much for small oil companies, if they could get insurance at all. But Tyson Slocum says there are ways to keep small oil companies in the game. He directs Public Citizens Energy Program.
If companies are concerned about potential financial risks going forward, they can team up together.
Lauren Scott says that's not the answer. He's a professor emeritus of economics at Louisiana State University. Scott says a higher liability cap would increase costs so much that drilling in the Gulf would be out of reach for small companies, even if they banded together.
If you increase the cost of operating in an area, and this will seriously increase the cost of operating in an area, you will see less activity in that area.
Scott says right now, small companies have a share in about half the deep water wells in the Gulf. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Another high-profile auto industry strike hits China, this time at a rubber gasket and seal factory near Shanghai. The factory supplies international brands like Honda. But workers say the plant's been idle for 5 days now. They're also accusing the police of brutality to break up the strike. Marketplace's Scott Tong was one of the first journalists to speak to workers there.
Workers at the KOK factory came off shift today and swarmed me. They asked for my email to send pictures of Monday's clash with police. That's unusual. Most Chinese avoid speaking to reporters. But it's day five of the sit-in. KOK worker Li Wei.
Line workers put in 12 hours a day and get 19 minutes to eat. Most workshops get up to 104 degrees in the summer.
As part of the protest Monday, hundreds gathered outside the plant in a show of force, they say. Then they say the police came. This worker says many were beaten. He was detained.
I was looking at my cell phone and police thought I'd taken pictures of the clash. So they took me to the police station for 7 hours.
The local government denies any violence occurred and says the strike has been resolved and things are back to normal. The company declined to talk. The global auto industry is watching the strikes closely in case they interrupt production. Question is, do a few strikes in 1 week make a trend? Labor watcher Anita Chen at the Australian National University thinks the actions are related.
It is likely. I mean, now news just travels in China. Workers hear about these things from all sources.
Even though government web overseers are pushing back. Last week, they directed Chinese media not to report major strikes. In Kunshan, outside Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
By the way, Scott got some photos and a video of the Chinese workers he spoke to. They're on our website, marketplace.org. If you bought any of those recalled drinking glasses promoting the new Shrek movie, McDonald's is offering an extra buck back for your trouble. Starting today, customers can get a $3 refund for the $2 collector's items. This scare over cadmium might have consumers wondering what they're going to have to worry about next. LA Times business columnist David Lazarus has been looking into that. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
We heard so much concern about Chinese products tainted with lead coming into the country some time ago. Now this, is there any indication that this problem is also coming from China?
Very unclear at this point, Bob. I asked McDonald's where the paint comes from, and they said it was manufactured in France. But I put this to Congresswoman Jackie Speier, who received the anonymous tip in the first place that there was cadmium in the glasses. And I pointed out that Europe has very, very stringent regulations when it comes to cadmium. It seems difficult to imagine that a manufacturer in France was using this substance in a paint. Congresswoman Speier agreed with that. She didn't think that this originated in Europe at all. Her suspicion was that, like so many other cadmium-tainted products, the road is going to take us all the way to China. She suspects perhaps a subcontractor or a provider of the ingredients for the paint. It seems very likely because China is one of the leading producers in the world of cadmium, and Congresswoman Speier tells me that's the way she's going to be looking.
And from that, I take it that this is not the last that we have heard, probably, of cadmium.
Not at all. In fact, Congresswoman Speier says she has legislation in the works that would expand the cadmium ban in the United States, not just to surfaces of kids' toys, but any product intended for children or marketed to children. The Consumer Product Safety Commission tells me they, in fact, do plan to have new rules in place, at least for public scrutiny, by the end of the summer.
Why do you think that this hasn't been on the regulatory radar screen until now?
I think this is one of those things where it just people didn't know. For so long, people were focused on the dangers of lead, and it didn't really occur to anybody to think, okay, well, if you take the lead out, what could manufacturers put in to replace it? We very quickly saw that the Chinese were putting cadmium in as a replacement to get those vivid pigments, the reds and the yellows, and we started seeing cadmium rocketing up in children's products. Now that we see what lead is being replaced with, then we're going to have to go after the replacements, and after that, of course, we'll go after the replacements for the replacements.
Business columnist David Lazarus of the LA Times, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And finally this morning, here's all you need for a relationship you can take to the bank. Bloomberg Businessweek reports the Japanese government is running some new magazine ads over there that suggest the way to a woman's heart is buying government-issued bonds. The ads feature a young woman along with this quote, "I want my future husband to be diligent about money. Playboys are no good." It may or may not be true gentlemen prefer blondes. Now we hear that women prefer bonds. I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.